can't get to sleep. I think about the implications of diving in too deep, and possibly the complications, especially at night. I worry over situations I know will be alright. Perhaps it's just an imagination. Shows the fear, ghosts appear and fade away. Alone between the sheets only brings exasperation. It's time to walk the streets, smell the desperation. At least there's pretty lights, and though there's little variation, it nullifies the night from overkill. Day after day reappears, night after night my heartbeat shows the fear.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show for the Financial Hour. Joining us for this hour, Chad Sturgill, our host Tom Dupree, and we are powered by Dupree Financial Group.
So, if anybody was, say, in their 20s in the early 80s, like I was, the group Men at Work came out, and they were from Australia, and the lead singer is a guy named Colin Hay. He's actually going to be, I think, if it's the same guy, he's going to be at the Opera House next week. And I know he's been in, this Ringo Starr band. That Ringo Starr has had this band, I think it's called the All-Star Band or something like that. But there's a certain Australian sound to this. And I'm going to tell you, just now it reminded me of another Australian band. And they had a hit in the 70s. And I'm going to send this to you, honey. What are you going to say? Go ahead.
AC/DC.
Nope, not them. It's got the, they use the sax in there some. Hold on, Elizabeth, here it comes. And I remember this band, too. There's a certain sound, the Little River Band.
Yep.
And they put out a song back in the late 70s, and it's got some elements of some of that sound, not exactly. From Melbourne. Tell you that it's true. Yeah, there's a sax line in there. It's kind of softer rock. You know, it sort of fits what I would call, would have called sort of an Australian groove if you want to go there. Who else is from?
Midnight Oil was another band. They came out after.
Is AC/DC from Australia?
Perth. Well, some of the members were from various.
When I was at Swanee, there was a guy named Wally. Wally was a little different. He was from Brooklyn. He liked computers. But his family had kind of lived all over the world, and Wally was a rock aficionado. He was a little bit like somebody from The Simpsons. You know, he's always had this T-shirt on talking about. Yep. His dad had been like a professor, and they lived in Perth. And he said, "You should have been there the time I saw Led Zeppelin in Perth." You know, he was a little bit like Beavis and Butthead, more kind of an overweight version. But Wally would talk about having seen, who knows, Long John Baldry in a pub in Melbourne, or in maybe in Johannesburg. You know, it was an interesting person. All right. What's not so interesting is having to see your hard-earned retirement money shucked out to pay for children, adult children that are not able to pay their own way. I'm just going to read a little bit from this article that Chad has come up with. It's by Will Daniel. It's from
Yahoo Finance,
March 11th. A parent's job is never really over, they say, but these days, instead of simply dishing out hard-won wisdom or offering to babysit the grandchildren, 47%,
wow,
of American parents are forced to help their adult children financially, according to a new savings.com survey. After the past few years of inflation, the average amount parents spend helping their adult kids is pretty shocking. Even though savings.com survey measured 1,000 parents with median incomes of only $50,000 to $75,000 annually, the average parent spent $1,384 a month, or $16,000 a year. That's about 27% of the average children on their adult kids. Paying for food, phone bills, and rent are the most common ways U.S. parents help their adult kids. But 21% of parents were still helping millennials and Gen X's, all the way up to 59. There is certainly been a failure to launch for many. I remember, this is a different day and time, 1978, 79, I came home from school, and I thought, I'll just live in the basement. And after about, a month, my mother said, "You're out of here." And I did have a job, and I recall going down on Mill Street, and there was a lady, Mrs. Gamble, and she had some rental properties. And she had this little carriage house behind her house. And I think I rented it for $185 a month. She had this big Airedale in the yard named Boone, and you had to make sure you didn't let him out. And when I stood fully up, my head hit the ceiling. But that was where I lived, and I remember being in that apartment when Lafayette won the state championship with Dirk Minifield and Junior Johnson in 1979, and all the cars were going up and down Mill Street because Rupp Arena's just nearby. But, I didn't have – there were a lot of things I didn't have to have. I didn't have to have a cell phone. I had a car that I had paid $1,000 for from Dad, and I bought it. It was a used Montego Mercury, and I had very little in terms of possessions, almost nothing in the bank. I mean, if I had $300 in my bank account at any given time, that was a lot of money. But I made it, and I know it's more complicated these days. But is it really? I don't know.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of factors. I mean, inflation is one of the primary culprits, but, let's talk about what's been impacted.
We had inflation back then, right, too. I mean, inflation was running in the mid to late 70s. We didn't think much about it. It was running 4% to 5% a year back then.
And interest rates were incredibly high, weren't they?
No, not yet. They were getting high. They were 2 years away from getting high.
Yeah, they're on their way up. But they, what you've seen, though, is you've seen, especially since the COVID pandemic, where you've had just a lot of money flood the system, you've seen inflation pretty much across the board. The main drivers, I think, are
I think it's higher than they report.
I agree. But, I mean, they have all these substitutes, and they have the adjustments they make to either for seasonality or whatever that really kind of improve or make the data look better than it really is, or make the inflation look lower, et cetera. So, but all of those factors, I mean, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing housing go way up. I mean, people can't afford houses, cars. I mean, there've been huge inflation in the price of vehicles. So all the things that I guess you start to get when you get into adulthood is cost has gone up. But most importantly, I think student loans. I mean, if you've gone to college, it's outrageous what the cost of college is. I mean, just how much it's gone up over the last 25 years.
I think it's criminal that these colleges have induced people to go out and borrow prodigious amounts of money, almost on the assumption that, well, you know, you'll be able to pay it back from your job. And they've led them into this financial buzzsaw. So they've, you know, now the government is basically saying, oh, it's okay, we'll pay it off for you. Well, that just puts more money in the hands of these universities. And it's not a good thing at all, because people are getting degrees that are not really very valuable in terms of their commercial usability, and they're coming out with $50, $60, $100,000 worth of student loan debt.
And that's happening in grad schools too. I mean, we have too many lawyers in this country, but the law schools are saying they can, you know, go ahead and borrow $200,000 to come to law school. You'll make it up when you get out. But I mean, unemployment rate is pretty high for that takes these newly minted grads of law school a while.
So let's talk about how this affects the retirees who are taking their money, and that's who we're interested in.
Right.
Are the retirees who are taking their money and putting it into keeping their kids afloat?
Well, you mentioned the one stat. I mean, we could kill you with stats today, and we're not going to do that. But 68%, Pew also did a survey, as did Bankrate, and 68% of parents, this is from Bankrate, 68% of parents with children over the age of 18 have made or are currently making financial sacrifices for their adult children. And that's what we're wanting to key on here, is because as much as high as the costs are that your adult children are facing these days, you can't give till it hurts. And that's what about half the parents are doing out there. They're harming their financial future. And I don't mean just they're not going to be able to go spend a vacation in Tahiti every year if they help their kids. I'm talking about they're going to run out of money before they run out of life.
Now, if you've ever been on an airplane, they don't do this as much as they used to. Maybe it was considered politically incorrect or something. But they used to say, if the air mass drops down during a loss of oxygen in the cabin, put the thing on yourself first before you put it on your kid. And there is a reason for that.
The
reason is that you have to be able to breathe before you can help anybody else. Now,
I was just jumping ahead. Yeah, that's exactly what they said in the article.
You've got to take care of yourself first. Let me tell you something. Your kids can figure out how to survive. I've got a 24-year-old who has figured out how to survive in Phoenix, Arizona, where he doesn't know anybody. Well, he knows his buddies that he lives with. He's living. This kid, his industriousness, I mean, it just blows my mind. Anyway, and you know, he's doing something that you can do. It's honest and it's legal, and it's not doing anything illegal. He's just doing stuff that, you know, he's unconventional in terms of his employment, And so are the guys that he lives with. They base it's the gig economy. But there are ways to do this, and you have to think about yourself. Parents have, and they, and I tell you, I had to say to this same child, you got to get out of here. You can't keep doing this. You're not going anywhere. He got that push, and then he went out and actually did something. And that was good for him. It was good for me. It was real good for her. And it's working out. And people, parents are afraid of being mean. They're afraid of being cruel to their child. I've got to keep helping. The cruelty is allowing them to continue to not grow up. And this is a thing that for some reason, you know, people are so worried about how something looks. This is, we run into this with money all the time. This is a big reason why a lot of people, I think, don't like Donald Trump. You know, he's just such a blunt person. Parent, family, they're just all, oh, we don't want to be so blunt. You know, we don't want to tell your kid you're a screw up. Get off your ass and go do something. Oh, we couldn't say that to poor Johnny. You know,
might hurt his self-esteem.
Yeah. It might have. He doesn't have any at this point. And here's why. Because he's being allowed to sponge off of you. You get self-esteem by getting up and doing things. I mean, I've been doing this for 46 years. I still have to take care of my self-esteem. And how do I do it? I do it by getting up and doing the next right thing each day. This is, by the way, this is how we invest. You know, we don't just sit in the back room with, you know, a dartboard and sunglasses tinted visors and, you know, smoke cigars and come up with, oh, I think this will be a good stock. No, it's by looking one day at a time at information, you know, surrounding these companies in which we invest. It's all blocking and tackling. It's the first part of it is showing up, and then you do the next thing. And it's this is what you got to do with your kids. You got to quit making them perpetual infants.
Yeah. The thing is there are kids out there that are trying, and things are so expensive. They do get some help.
You know, buy something cheaper then. I'm sorry.
Well, no, what I'm saying is these parents think they're starting out helping them temporarily, and temporary turns into be it's permanent. Like an addiction. And that's what one of the, I guess, pieces of advice, biggest takeaways from the articles are to set limits. You define how much you're going to help that's them and for how do. Long, and make sure that very you communicate that. It absolutely. But then you say, and they use an example of, we'll pay this bill for you up until you turn this age. And then that gives them time to figure out how to pay for it themselves.
Well, there comes a point at which one would hope that the kid says, I don't want your help anymore. I want the feeling of having done it for myself. And then they will, of their own, begin to cover these bills. But this day and time, people aren't like that, you know, and you've got to be able to say, okay, you're not on our insurance anymore. You got to get your own insurance. You need to go get your own taxes done. Now, some people in the marriage are weaker at enforcing those boundaries than others. You know, I know that that mothers tend to, you know, have this sense of, oh, you know, we'll take care of this. And they don't want to see their own behavior thrown up to them. You know that's true, don't you?
Once again, we need video for this show, because the facial expressions throughout have been
yeah, but you mommy people great. Real bad sometimes.
You know, I think it's an individual thing, and I don't think fingers should be pointed. And no, I'm not talking about
it's not a finger pointing thing. No. It's simply an observation.
Well, let me wrap up the segment. It also
let's wrap this son of a buck up.
Can I get him to be quiet for just a minute?
Wrap it up.
It's frame of reference, and when I was 21 and just out of college, my father gave me 2 weeks to get a job and be out of the house. He put his hands together and clapped and said,
"And that's when your grandmother good luck. Took over.
Done and
no,
dusted.
No, no.
That's when your grandmother he took said, over.
And I was blessed. I was given a college education, which a lot of people are not, and was debt-free to start. I didn't stay that way, but I figured my way out of it. Exactly. But anyway, when you have been thrown into the cold water like that, sometimes you want to help others have a safe, softer landing. So,
well, that's the thing. And you see these rags to riches people, and they make a bunch of money, and they don't want their kids to go through anything that they went through. And the next generation is lost because they didn't have to do.
They didn't have to struggle.
The thing, it happens over and over again.
Good intentions, right.
I think that that's part of the reason that some people are successful is they just had to figure it out. I will leave this segment with that. You've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show with Chad Sturgill and Tom Dupree. As we've mentioned before, we have an events page at DupreeFinancial.com, and there are some events posted. They are workshops designed to educate and empower. We don't sell anything, and we'd love for you to go to the website at DupreeFinancial.com/events and take a look at what we're offering. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the Tom Dupree Show. Stay tuned. Night after
night, my heartbeat shows the fear.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. A few months ago, we began publicly predicting lower interest rates. At the time, it seemed like a strange thing to predict, given that some of the most well-known names on Wall Street were saying the opposite. Events have proved us correct. If you disregarded our call and kept money in cash and short-term obligations like CDs and money funds, you've left quite a bit on the table. We warned against becoming complacent. When the Federal Reserve begins to cut, rates will drop quickly. We were right. To find out what we think the next move is, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and make an appointment with us. Also, be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and your favorite podcast platform.
Nobody's screaming.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show for our financial hour. Joining us, Chad Sturgill, our host, Tom Dupree. And we are powered by the good Tommy at Dupree Financial Group.
Yeah, this song came from the very first Minute Work album called Business as Usual. And I took a trip to a place called Tortola with a friend of mine named Bill Hall one Christmas and New Year's. It's like 81, maybe 82. And we flew from, we flew from Melbourne to Miami and then Miami to San Juan. And then San Juan, we took a puddle jumper to Tortola, which is it's just near St. John. It's the British Virgin Islands instead of the U.S. And that was quite an interesting place. We stayed at this place called Prospect Reef, which was right in Road Town. And then we ended up out at a place called the Long Bay, which was farther out the road. And it's a guy named Terry, somebody, British guy that owned it. And he was Mick Jagger would go there sometimes. I don't even, you know, Tortola's been absolutely just denuded by hurricanes once or twice. And but this was about 1981 or two. It was an interesting place. It really was. And my friend Bill. So
there's always a good Bill story.
There was, you know, it was just the two of us, and there was a group of people our age from Boston that were down there. It's like a bunch of them, like 8 or 10 guys and girls. And there was a girl that was about his age, and he just got fixated on her. And he starts asking her if he wants to go out. And after about the fourth or fifth time, I said, Bill, I think she's trying to tell you that she's not interested. He couldn't deal with that. Anyway.
And incidentally, I do know that the song is Be Good Johnny, not Be Good Tommy, but it was just.
Well, you're going to have to deal with the FCC on that one yourself. You know, or.
Oh, okay.
Or BMI.
As long as,
BMI
or as, long as it's not your wrath, I'm good.
Or ASCAP or somebody or whoever. They're going to get into you for. You know, changing the words of a song. All right.
I think that Johnny in that song, though, is probably somebody who's getting help from his parents as an adult.
I would say so. Yeah. He might be in jail at this point. annuity sales are soaring because of higher payouts. What you need to know. All right. So Chad has come up with another really good article here from Barron's by Debbie Carlson. Higher interest rates are making annuities of all stripes more attractive, allowing buyers a chance to protect their principal and lock in the yield before the payouts decline. Sales of the insurance product hit a record in 2023 as a combination of volatile equity and bond markets and higher annuity payouts propel buyers to seek annuities, says Brian Hodgins, head of LIMRA Research, an industry group. A lot of annuities with high annual fees and costly surrender charges were sold in the past, and the product still has a bad reputation with many consumers and financial advisors. Experts say that annuities have become more consumer-friendly in recent years as insurers lessen fees, shorten surrender periods, and offer more flexible options on withdrawals. And third-party websites are making it easier for do-yourself investors to comparison shop and buy income annuities. Now,
that sounds like greenwashing.
Yeah, I know. It's really more consumer friendly for sure.
Read the fine print. Okay. Right?
Let's examine briefly what an annuity is. An annuity is a product that it's not an investment product. It's an insurance product with an investment product inside of it. But when you get down to it, an annuity is a type of an insurance policy. And the thing that makes it insurance is the thing that makes the accumulation inside of it tax deferred until it's withdrawn. So there's a tax deferral element of it, similar to that of an IRA, but the difference is you can put in after-tax money. You don't get a tax deduction for putting money into annuity. You do for putting it into an IRA up to certain income limits. Now, so there's that tax deferred accumulation of wealth until it begins to be taken out, at which point then we're talking 100% taxable income over and above the amount of the money that was put in, which is called the premium. Now, there are three basically different kinds of annuities. There are what are called fixed annuities, and that's a sort of a wide range. That can also include index annuities in that fixed annuity moniker. So index annuities are sold as if, oh, you're going to get to participate in the stock market. You're really not. They make it look that way, but the fact is it's your gains are very much capped off to where it's more like being in a CD. Then they have just plain fixed annuities that don't attempt to be involved in the stock market. They just pay you an interest. So that's one range, fixed annuities. Then there's what's called an immediate annuity. Now, that's a thing that you put your money in and you never get your principal back. But what you get back is a stream of income that can either last until you die, or you can put another person on the thing with you and it lasts until the second person dies, or it can be an annuity that is fixed certain, so it's going to pay out for a certain period of time. But that is nothing but a return of principal. So if you buy an immediate annuity, you're basically taking a sum of money and exchanging it for a stream of income. So the calculation you've got to make is, will you beat the insurance company by living longer than what they calculate you'll live and have to pay out on? Because that kind of annuity is simple arithmetic, really. It's, do we end up having to pay out more than what they paid in and be able to keep some profit? That's the second. And then the third kind are called variable annuities. And all those are mutual funds that have stocks and bonds in them wrapped inside of an insurance wrapper, which enables the insurance company to give you certain kinds of protection and riders and the tax deduction part. Now, what people are told when they buy an annuity is that this investment in the annuity is adding a high degree of certainty to their investment process. You're going to hear things like can't lose money, guaranteed, insured. And they throw those things around, and the average investor does not understand how insurance companies work, how guarantees on these things work. They simply hear the words guaranteed, insured, and they go, oh, sigh of relief. This is exactly what this means, that if I put my money in this thing, I don't have to think about it anymore. It's now taken care of. And me, the average to below average investor, can rest assured that my money is guaranteed and taken care of. And let's not worry about returns, because what I'm trying to get here is security.
And this number you're showing me, it's like when you go to a car dealership and they ask you, how much is are you willing to pay? What's your monthly payment? Yeah. What can you afford? And they build a product, or they sell you a car based on that payment. And same thing with the annuities. How much do you have to have? And they'll sell you probably the most expensive annuity that hits that number for you. And so you're happy because you've got that number coming in, but you're not factoring inflation in like you probably, I mean, fully. And then also what you don't see is that if you did, I mean, there are ways to do annuity-like returns without having it in an annuity and paying those expenses. So you really are sacrificing more than you realize when you lock that in. I mean, they are illiquid. I mean, some of these annuities have 10 plus year surrender charges. So if you had something happen, you needed
to get
your money out.
Semi-liquid. They're liquid at a price.
Well, right. That's true. It's a surrender charge. It's not like you can't get anything out.
They're liquid at a price.
And they generally allow you to get a certain percentage, usually like 10% out each year if you wanted to invest it in other ways. But if you had an emergency where you needed a chunk of money, you'd have to pay the surrender charge to get that out. I mean, it sounds good on paper, but there are a lot of, as Elizabeth said, read the fine print. And because, I mean, there's so many choices to make. I mean, you think you're getting this basic annuity, but there are 18 different options on it that all cost money. And, you know, you really don't know if you're covering everything, and you might end up buying too many options and paying 3% a year in fees that you don't need to necessarily pay. So you need to think about what's in it for the insurance company. Why are they selling it to you? They're likely to win because they employ a bunch of really smart actuarials that know
they
when
will
you're going
to die. Now, unless like they're very wrong on some things and they don't lay off their insurance responsibility. So what we try to do, and this is how I'm going to sell us versus an annuity, and I'm going to ask you to listen. Everybody in this business, in the investment business, in the financial business, relies on markets to do business, to conduct business. There is no way to completely insure away market risk. Now, when you're sitting down for a proposal of an annuity, you're going to be told things by someone who, in all intents and purposes, is not a financial expert. They are a salesman. And there's a reason why that's where the annuities end up going, because an annuity pays a rather large commission to the salesman who sells it. How do I know? I did it when I was with the brokerage firm. I was an annuity salesman. Now, I tended to sell the ones that didn't have the big thing, big upfront commission, but I sold some that did have upfront commissions. I know how they work. They're not driven by investment research. They're driven by appealing to your fears. You're afraid your money's going to go down, so therefore you want some sort of security. And a smart salesman recognizes that about you, the client, and they will exploit that. And therefore, remember, when you're being sold an annuity, it's typically playing to your fears. The thing you need to understand is that no matter how much they dress it up to sound like it's going to insulate you from any sort of potential loss, they cannot do that. One thing is, you're dependent upon the insurance company to be able to pay out their obligations. If there were a problem at some point where they couldn't, now you got issues. The other side is that if you don't load yourself up with all these riders, the money inside the subaccounts that you have that are investment related could go down. And when you tried to liquidate the money from the annuity, it might not be there.
Right.
So, Chad, you were talking about a case study, and I don't know how in-depth we can go on air, but what illustration could you draw that it's a good example of why they sometimes really don't work?
Well, for the longest time, with interest rates being very low, inflation was low at that time, but your fixed annuity wasn't paying a very high rate. And so some people would
almost
try to
nothing.
Look at – well, let's have a stock component in it, an S&P 500 index sub-account within that annuity, and you could get the upside of that, but also protect yourself from the downside, or you could get some of the upside. As Tom was mentioning earlier, you can get
if it's a year when the market goes up 10%, you may get 5%, or you might get 3.5%, depending on what you have. So you're going to limit your upside to protect the downside. But what's been happening, though, is people have been afraid of the markets after the Great Recession. They've also been afraid of the markets after the COVID recession, even though it was very short-lived. So they want that safety. They go and they buy an annuity. Perceived safety, that's right. They go and buy annuity thinking they've done a good thing, and then they conditions change, and so that annuity they were getting in their fixed account getting 1 or 2% on, and they're having the portion that's invested in the stocks go up in some years and some years down. I mean, what they've effectively done is not made anything, and in some cases lost money because of the fees associated with the right. annuities. And then, but they're locked in.
But they felt
in.
Secure, and that's important.
But they've put too much of their money in it as well. They've put a huge chunk of their money in it.
Okay, so that gets back to what I wanted to say, is that you cannot avoid market risk to some degree. And if you're going to accept that, what we do is we subject you to a certain amount of well-thought-out market risk that we think may give you the possibility for, number one, good dividends, and number two, or should I call it 1A, growth of principal. And it would be real growth that you would get to keep. It wouldn't be capped by some sort of formula inside of an annuity that says, even though the market went up 10%, you only get to have 3.5, which they do. They cap what you can get. And so if you believe the idea that market risk is not going to go away, and if you can invest in things that you understand or somebody understands and has studied and can give you a real possibility at some major gains, which you're going to need down the road in order to pay bills, we urge you to give us a call, because I will put our performance and what we do up against any annuity out there.
And what we can do, you want us to have you, we can review your plan, your annuity, and see
right,
if it makes sense. And if you have something that could be improved upon, we can give you a strategy to get out of it where you won't have to pay the surrender charges. It might take a little time, but we help you come up with a game plan and show you an alternative that might work better in your case. And then you can make that decision. But it doesn't cost anything to come in and talk to us. We'll sit down with you, go over your situation, go over your specific annuity, if that's what you have, or just your retirement plan, whatever it is you have. We'll come in and see us, and we can put a plan together to show you what you have versus what you could have.
Right.
And we've said before, insurance companies do not like to lose money. So they're not going to design something.
And we don't like our clients to either.
No, we don't. And there's a reason with the high commissions that annuities pay that we don't sell them, because we don't feel like they're...
We'd always, rather be poor.
No, we'd rather look out for the best interest of our client. And the other thing that's really confusing to
it's
me...
A joke.
Looking,
it was only a
oh,
joke.
And your jokes are not funny. We've established that. But one of the... And now you interrupted my point. Ugh. I should get used to this after how many years?
At least a few, yep.
Overcome. my Lord. Anyway, it'll come to me after we wrap up the show. So I'm going to turn some music on and bail out of this. You've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show with Chad Sturgill and our host, Tom Dupree. We have an events page on our website at DupreeFinancial.com. We have posted some workshops that we will be hosting, which we will be selling nothing, including annuities. No annuities will be sold. Nothing will be sold. It's purely educational and designed to be empowering. Go to the website and register at DupreeFinancial.com on the events page. We appreciate you listening to the Financial Hour.
What kind of boy are you, John? I only like dreams.